Can you hear me in the back? Okay, Marshall? Okay. Okay, good, good, good. So before we begin today's presentation, I'd just like to get a little audience participation because I'm terrible at that. Before today's presentation was announced, how many had heard of Bayes' theorem? Oh, that's good. That's good. I'm going to flash it up once, but please don't try to memorize it or even think through it. We're going to do an audience participation using Bayesian analysis on a sort of a hypothetical later on. So before today's presentation was announced, how many knew that Bayes was a Presbyterian theologian and minister? Good, good, good. You have been hanging around too many lawyers. You are too exact. And this circle, that's a perfect circle. Assume it is. How many of you have heard of Nicholas Cusanus? Ah, great. We've got a lot of work to do here, right? I can see. Got one more minute.
No, Gordon, you can go ahead and start.
Okay.
Go for it.
I'm going to go for it. You've heard of Nicholas Cusanus. Okay, there we go, one person. Okay, as we get settled in, please join me in prayer if you would. Gracious God, thank you for enabling us to gather and discuss the work of your servant, Reverend Thomas Bayes. Continue to grant us strength, courage, and freedom from despair while living in these times of pandemic. For you alone are our rock and our redeemer. So a couple of quick housekeeping things. Speech has been characterized as the slowest form of human communication. So I'm not gonna read the slides. I'll throw up a bunch of them, let you go through them quickly. Some of them I may spend a little more time on. We will have audience participation in an example of Bayesian analysis. We're not going to focus on the formula. I'll throw it up real quickly and we'll go beyond that. There were three things I wanted to cover: the audience participation, the Bayesian analysis, the application of Bayes' concept of statistical independence to theodicy, you turn down, and a clip from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The clip doesn't work, so we won't do that. You'll have to go home and look at it yourself. But it has to do, it's the clip associated with the improbability drive. So my goal here, larger goal, is to open a dialogue perhaps about what it means to be Presbyterian, and we're going to be looking at that in other adult education series going forward. Thomas Bayes to me is fascinating because while he lived in the 1700s, which was a time when the hot topic was theodicy, he was pretty much forgotten about until after World War II, and we'll see in a minute why that was. But his work now has been applied in a number of areas, including some that are very important to us. So, if this works, it doesn't work. Help. Okay, I was going to throw up the agenda. It looks like we have a choice of, why don't we just get rid of the screen here and go back to the screen there. There we go. There's the agenda. What do we wish? Okay. We'll talk a little bit about how Presbyterians got to be included in the category of nonconformist clergy by the early 18th century. We'll look at another theologian and mathematician, Nicholas Cusanus. That's why this circle is here. Then we'll look at the early life of Thomas Bayes. He only published two works during his life, but his most important work was actually published after he was dead. And then we'll look at, hopefully, the realm of statistical independence and theodicy, Leviathan, Job, Does anybody know what book of the Bible has the longest monologue of God? I just gave you a hint.
Job.
Yes, thank you. And what does God talk about?
Creation.
He talks about Leviathan, a dragon of chaos. We'll touch on this in a minute. For the next time, we'll be talking about Scottish Enlightenment, applications in medicine and pharmaceuticals. This is something that to me is very interesting. You take a COVID test that is very close to being 100% accurate, you get a positive result. What's the likelihood you actually have COVID? I'm not going to look at that now, though. The next three slides we'll go through really, really quickly. This is covering about 170 years from the 1530s up till the early 1700s when Bayes was born. As you know, Henry VIII broke with the Catholic Church. One of the people who helped him on his divorce was the Archbishop of Canterbury, a man named Thomas Cranmer, who was given the task of writing a liturgy for the new church, Book of Common Prayer. After Mary I assumed the throne, who was the daughter, of course, of the divorced wife, she had Cranmer tried for heresy and burned at the stake, and they threw out the Book of Common Prayer. I'm not going to go through all this. This is just back and forth, over 170 years. In 1660s or so, the monarchy was overthrown. I'm sorry, in 1649. Churches were allowed to use their own forms of worship. Then the monarchy was restored. The Book of Common Prayer was again required. About 2,000 clergy said, enough. We're not going to participate in this. They were the nonconformists. And that group includes Presbyterians, Congregationalists, Baptists, and Quakers. They were banned from holding public office, generally excluded from universities. So this is probably why Thomas Bayes, who grew up in a nonconformist family, wound up going to university in Edinburgh in Scotland. Ah, Nicholas Cusanus, one of my favorites. No one's heard of him. Okay. He spent some time in Cologne and was influenced by both Thomas Aquinas, who was dead by then, and also by another dead person named, a Dominican monk named Eckhart, who's very close to my research because I did that work on his some of his writings in grad school. Cusanus tried to use mathematics to talk about deeper theological subjects. One thing, he says that mathematics assist us in apprehending various divine truths. But I think he was also concerned about what happened to Eckhart, because Eckhart used language which was misunderstood. He talks about a divine spark within, a citadel of the soul. And Eckhart disappeared on the way to meeting with the Pope at the Pope's request, and we don't know what happened to him. Cusanus then was more careful. He was a bishop in the church. His most important work translates into On Learned Ignorance. And what Cusanus said was, if you assume that omniscience, the sort of all-knowing wisdom, knowledge that God has, is a perfect circle, you can never quite get there. What you could do, you could thoroughly study, let's say, theology. You could study physics, you could study chemistry, you could study math, and so on. You thoroughly study all these subjects, and the best you can do is connect them in your mind, and you have a multi-sided figure. Let's call it a polygon, which I think is what it is, which approaches the circle. As you increase the number of sides to infinity, if you will, you never quite get there. So Cusanus took some of the work of Eckhart and others, utilized mathematics to explain it in a way that didn't offend the church, and remained a bishop. He was born about 300 years before Thomas Bayes. There's a lot we don't know about Thomas Bayes. We don't know for sure if he was born in 71 or 1702, we don't know if the picture that's on the church website is actually Thomas Bayes. We don't know much about his early life at all. We do know that by 1719, he was studying at the University of Edinburgh. He was the eldest of seven children born into a family that had made money in the cutlery business. They were from Sheffield, England. You may have heard of Sheffield knives. He returned to London after graduation. By 1728, he was named as a minister in the area. And a few years later, he is a minister at a resort town about 35 miles outside of London called Tunbridge Wells, where people came to drink brownish water that was filled with iron and feel better. He was described as a respected minister, but not a very popular one. Interestingly, he was well known actually at the time. He was elected to the Royal Society of London, which is sort of like the Academy Award Society, if you will, for scientists and for philosophers. Two publications he did. The first had to do with theodicy, which was the hot topic of the 18th century. And if you recall, Leibniz earlier had said, oh, this is the best of all possible worlds. And then, November 1st, 1755, what did we have? There was an earthquake that destroyed Lisbon. Tens of thousands of people died. It was kind of hard to justify this concept of the world being the best of all possible worlds when you see this suffering, pain, misery, and death going on. Bayes wrote his work on theodicy in response to a minister's work from the Church of England who basically said, oh, everything God does is good and everything is fine and everything is perfect. The other work he did was a defense of Newton's differential calculus, which he called fluxions. I won't get into that at all. So Bayes is using mathematics and statistics to try to prove that in spite of what we see in the world, God is benevolent, God is good, God wants the happiness of all mankind, of all humankind. Yet we have evil, we have suffering, we have pain, we have death. So how do we justify that? His most important work, however, was published after his death, and it was found by a friend named Richard Price, who was going through the apartment, and in spite of what was shown in the cartoons, Price actually was authorized by Bayes' family to go through the apartment. Bayes never married. He didn't have any descendants. He apparently lived in a boarding house in Tunbridge Wells. He didn't own a house. So these three bullet points are taken directly from the beginning of Bayes' essay. And the problem he tried to solve is that given the number of times that an unknown event happens, there is some probability of its happening in a single trial that lies between two probabilities that can be determined. And for me, especially interesting is he goes on to talk about statistical independence. Events that are independent when the happening of any one does not either increase or decrease the probability of the rest. A quick, silly example. You flip a coin 10,000 times. You expect to get heads half the time, tails half the time. If you flip the coin 10,000 times on Saturday, does the result change if you flip the coin 10,000 times on Tuesday? No. Those two events are totally independent, day of the week and flipping the coin. Richard Price, when he published Thomas Bayes' work and presented it to the Royal Society, prepared an introduction. And he says something that I think is totally and completely wrong. He says that Bayes' work can be used to establish whether or not there's a God. I don't think Bayes ever went back that far. Bayes was a Presbyterian minister. He assumed there is a God. The question is, how do you justify the existence of evil with a benevolent God? So I think Price was totally off on this, but that's my own personal opinion. Ah, the theorem, what you've all been waiting for. It's pretty simple. This means given that, the vertical line, the probability of event A given event B is the probability of B given A multiplied by the probability of A divided by the probability of B. Simple, right? What if this is, though, not a single number, but a polynomial? Ah, it gets a little tricky then. We're going to go on. Now, we're going to do the audience participation. I think this is a good time. Fred is a man who is very focused on detail. He has a personality that could be described as introverted. The question, is Fred most likely to be a librarian or a farmer? Think about it for a few minutes. The clock is ticking away. Dun, bum, bum. How many think Fred is a farmer? How many think Fred is a librarian? This is an example of what Kahneman and Tversky in 1974 called bias. If you look at the total population of the US, there are a lot more males who are farmers than there are males who are librarians. However, in our daily life, we're much more likely to meet someone that we know is a librarian than a farmer. So, this was a study that Kahneman and Tversky carried out in the 70s with a bunch of volunteers. One of them died, I forget which one. The other one got the Nobel Prize for this work years later. Michael Lewis, who actually has spoken here at the church, actually did a book on these guys. I haven't read it yet, but it looks pretty cool. So the real answer, if you look at the statistics, if you look at the numbers, is probably that Fred is a farmer, not a librarian. And this, Kahneman and Tversky said, is an example of bias when we use shortcuts to try to come up with answers.
The other thing is when we think of details, we're thinking of, well, milk carts and things like that. And there are lots of details in farming.
Right.
And an introvert would be really happy out on his tractor.
Yeah. In fact, many farmers are obsessively compulsive because you make a mistake, you lose your arm, or you die. Right. Something that's near and dear to my heart, econometrics. Econometrics is the application of the discipline of physics to a social science. Okay, I can hear you all laughing back there. It's possible but difficult. Lawrence Klein, who won the Nobel Prize in 1980, is now deceased, focused on what-if sort of analysis rather than trying to predict the stock market or financial markets. Interestingly enough, there are a couple of Princeton PhDs who did a book entitled Mostly Harmless Econometrics, which is a play on Douglas Adams and his last work, Mostly Harmless. It doesn't mention Bayes, however. Hypothesis testing. This is one of the things that Bayesian analysis is utilized for in economics. Let's say you're concerned about the economy and you say, why don't we go around with helicopters and drop checks for $1,200 to everybody in the country? That should increase the GDP by 10% or so. There's four possible answers to that analysis. One, additional data correctly confirm your hypothesis was correct. Two, additional data correctly confirm that the hypothesis was wrong, was false. Or, interestingly enough, additional data incorrectly suggest the hypothesis was true, or additional data incorrectly suggest the hypothesis was false. This is sort of similar to our COVID testing question earlier that we'll look at again next week. And this is where Bayesian analysis is utilized in public policy almost a daily basis. A quote from a British paper, The Guardian, which I will read. The work of Thomas Bayes has been central to understanding the pandemic. The math is used to work out the conditional probability that a person is not infected given a positive test. Many complex pandemic analyses have been Bayesian, including modeling lockdown effects, the Office for National Statistics study, infection survey, and the BioNTech vaccine trial. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about statistical independence in the context of theodicy. And here I'm kind of extending the Bayesian framework into something going a little bit beyond where he explicitly went, but I think it's interesting. If you're in a realm of pure statistical independence, it means that one moment is totally unrelated to the next. And this is something that is, shall we say, hostile to life. It's very, very difficult. And it's something, it's like the concept of a pure vacuum. We never really experience it. But we experience sort of a hint of it from time to time. Now, if you were living 5,000 years ago, and Bayes hadn't been born, and the whole concept of statistics hadn't been developed, how would you explain statistical independence to an audience? I think you would talk about a dragon of chaos. You would talk about Tiamat, who was slain by Marduk. And after Marduk killed Tiamat, he created heaven and earth. You might talk about Leviathan, a crocodile, a hippopotamus. In contrast to statistical independence, the world we live in is more tied to serial correlation. That is, one moment is related to the next. You get up in the morning, the sun rises every day, just like you expect. In the book of Job, toward the end of the book, God has this long monologue with Job. And Job is, I think, written in poetry, and the translations are difficult. But it seems like that God is trying to explain to Job, look, there's Leviathan out there. You think you can control Leviathan? You think you can put Leviathan in a bird cage and have your children teach Leviathan to sing little songs? No. Leviathan has always been there. It's the dragon of chaos. It's subordinate to God, but it's always there, and sometimes it just pops through. Leviathan, he's the chief of God's works, made to be a tyrant over his peers. Firebrands shoot out of his mouth and sparks come streaming out. Pretty scary. Well, now we get to the little clip from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that I can't show you because it won't work. But this is the infinite improbability drive, which is a means of quickly passing through interstellar distances, and it's accomplished by simultaneously passing through every conceivable point in every conceivable universe. You can pull this up on YouTube, just don't watch the very end of it, it's a little bit off color. Bayes is increasingly being recognized, even though we sort of seem to have forgotten that he was a Presbyterian theologian. At Edinburgh, they've established in 2018 a Center for Artificial Intelligence and Data Science. So we're getting close to conclusion here, and I toss out again the question of a false positive, which we'll look at next time, as well as the Scottish Enlightenment and its influence on Thomas Bayes. I think we can open for questions if you'd like. Yeah. Right. That clock gives me an extra half an hour. Questions? And I'll repeat them so that they're recorded, if that's okay. Oh, sure. If you just Google Douglas Adams, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you can pull it up. You could probably pull it up for us, actually. Yeah. Gordon,
I'm wondering if you can say more about how Bayesian theory has been applied to COVID. I don't quite understand.
Got it. Yeah. And I was going to leave that for Larry Alce next week, since he's in the pharmaceutical industry, but I can say a little bit. And unfortunately, we'll have to go back to the equation, I think, to do that. So what you're looking at is, what is the probability that you actually have COVID, given that you have a positive test? And the cartoon that's on the website of the church goes into that theoretical for Deneg fever. They make one mistake that's obvious. They talk about a test that's 99.9% accurate, and yet they talk about a population of 10,000 where 9,989 don't have, it should be 9,990, right? Small little glitch. That's probably the best place to look at it, but the point that is made on that video is that although the test is 99.9% accurate, you have to look at both sensitivity of the test and specificity, here I am getting in big words, that I of the test, and also the occurrence of the disease in the population that you're in at the time. The video kind of skips over that. Those are numbers that are kind of hard to come up with. But what the video points out is, although the test is 99.9% accurate, your actual likelihood of having the disease is about 9%, a little bit over 9%, in that example they use, which is kind of accurate. I'm struggling here because I'm neither a mathematician nor a statistician nor a theologian, and I don't want to get into the math where I'll drown to death here, but take a look again at that video that's on the website. Yes, please, Reiner.
I would think that also the question, what does it mean when you say somebody has COVID?
Right.
Does he carry the virus, or is he really sick?
Yes.
The test only says it carries the virus. It
right.
doesn't say the person is sick.
Correct.
That's another definition, too.
Yeah, which I think is the question of specificity. Thank you. Yeah. In other words, do you actually have, you're carrying
the virus,
but is it active or is it just something left over? Yeah. No, that's good. Larry Alfs will be able to address this much better. He did a technical paper using Bayesian analysis, which is too difficult for me to read. I never got past the first two sentences of it. Cynthia Miller will talk about application of Bayesian analysis in public policy and also the relationship with the Scottish Enlightenment, and all that's next week. Yes, please. I'm sorry, I didn't copy the last.
The degree to which Bayes' religion actually informed his math. Do we know much about his own?
Yeah, and I did a very poor job of presenting that. I'm sorry.
No.
For me, I joked in the write-up that's on the church website that people said Bayes dabbled in mathematics. And if you read the New York Times article, it says, he did mathematics on the side. I think mathematics was an integral part of his theology, just as it was for Cusanus. For Cusanus, it was for a slightly different reason. He also wanted to avoid heresy, I think, as well. But when you're trying to express something where words just don't quite get there, what do you use? You could use the image of a divine spark to talk about certain things, as Eckhart did. You're going to be misunderstood. You're going to be charged with heresy and probably will die. Or you could use mathematics. And I think one of the concerns we have today is we've separated the two. And I think maybe before you came in, we did a quick survey. How many people before today knew that Bayes was a Presbyterian theologian? I think we got one hand, because I told you last week, right?
I was shocked, because I know about his mathematics. I mean,
yeah.
That's how I know about Bayes.
Yeah, yeah. And Bayes was well known in his time, the fact that he was elected to the Royal Society. The problem is he passed away before his most important work was published. So you get Richard Price sort of stepping in and trying to twist it a little bit and saying, well, you know, this is a good framework for proving the existence of God. No, I don't think that's what Bayes was really trying to do at all. And Larry Alfs agrees with me on this, but.
But just sort of hinted at this other idea that this equation, right, you could write it as the probability of evil occurring given God is good is equal to this, right? And so I think it seems as though Bayes was maybe more focused on explaining the presence of evil in the world than he was of explaining that God existed. Like you said, he was a Presbyterian minister. He assumed that God existed. But the problem of the time was, well, you know, there's earthquakes in Lisbon. There's plagues in the past. There's all these things that go wrong, right?
You're right.
Babies die and mothers die in childbirth,
right.
You know, at a high mortality rate
right.
at this time, right? So
right.
It's like, how do we explain this? Given that God is good, and this idea that you started with, that God's chief purpose is to provide happiness for his creation.
You're right. Two quick thoughts here. One, the theodicy topic was the hot topic of the 18th century. Secondly, Bayes didn't develop this or didn't publish this theorem at the time he did his work on theodicy. So I think you're exactly right. I think this is where he's going with it, but he didn't quite get that fully developed during his lifetime, which is sad. But
how old was he when he died?
I'm sorry, please.
How old was he when he died?
In his 60s. Drawing a blank on that. Yeah. Please.
I think I'm the only one here who never heard of Colin Bayes before I read your blurb on the web.
No, no one else had heard of him. Maybe three people, maybe. Yeah.
You never asked. You never heard of him.
Right.
Did you know what his theorem was? Anyway. And I never wasn't familiar with the word theosophy. Could you start with what's the etymology of theosophy? God says, God whatever. Second, wait. Second, could you give me a couple of take-home messages
okay.
to prepare me for Larry next week?
Prepare you for, I'm sorry?
Larry, next week.
Ah, okay. Theodicy comes from the Greek theos, God, right? And justification.
Sort
I think.
Why do bad things happen to good people?
Theses. God says, God dictates. What's the dicity part of theodicy?
Isn't it justice?
It's about the problem of evil.
We understand. We want the word.
The etymology.
Oh, that I can't tell.
Yeah.
I think it's from justice, but I have to look it up. I have not thought about that at all. I can look it up.
Thank you. He'll look it up in the court.
Yeah. Thank you for the question. Take homes for next week. We'll talk about Scottish Enlightenment and its influence on Bayes. We'll talk about the utilization of Bayesian analysis in the pharmaceutical and possibly the medical industry.
Not my question.
Oh, please.
What did I learn today?
Ah.
That'll help me next week.
Don't memorize this. I think. For me, the most interesting takeaway would be that little study we did with Fred, which is also related to how do I know, given that I got a positive test and my test is accurate, how do I know that I really have COVID? Or do I have a false positive? In a broader sense, how do I know that the drug that I'm taking, the injections, are actually working? what kind of studies are done, and all that utilizes Bayesian analysis. And Larry has this interesting technical paper he did with four other colleagues. I don't know that he'll bring it out or not, but he utilizes Bayesian analysis in the pharmaceutical industry. And I think the Fred example is probably the best takeaway. Don't memorize this, please.
Oh,
no. This doesn't help. Please. Okay, yes.
This is a question about church history. Could you specifically say what the objection of the four nonconforming groups had to the Book of Common Prayer?
The short answer is no. I think if we, and I went through this really, really quickly, over 170 years you had restoration of the monarchy, where the monarchy said you have to use our form of liturgy. And then there was an act of toleration which said, okay, well, maybe you don't have to. And then the monarchy is overthrown and the Book of Common Worship is thrown out. I think over 170 years, this back and forth, where people actually died over this question, caused, when there was a little bit more freedom, some of the non-conforming clergy to just say, we've had it enough. We can come up with our own liturgy. The Presbyterian Church has, I think, you don't see it in the pews like you do in the Anglican Church, but it has a Book of Common Worship.
Yeah,
you can look it up. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but let's be clear, right? The Anglican Church was not a Reformed Church. It was a Catholic Church without a Pope. So the Book of Common Prayer was basically a Catholic worship book, and Presbyterians, the Baptists, the Quakers said, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
We're going to do Reformed worship. We're following a Reformed tradition. We're looking for something different than this Anglican thing, which is basically Catholic theology without a pope.
So
the king instead of a pope.
Keith bailed me out on the question.
So that's kind of what's going on in this revolution.
No. I'd love to read it.
You may or may not know, there's like a lot of literature on the birth of statistics.
On what?
On the birth of statistics.
Birth of statistics, yes.
Mm-hmm. And Bayes is kind of the background to
right.
that. And this one writer argues that there was actually statistical thinking earlier, before the Reformation, and especially in Spain and other places that had the Inquisition, because they had to be able to weigh evidence. So it's basically his argument for a proto-statistical thinking that was developed under the Inquisition, a tradition that we don't know about yet. But it also gets at the fact that many of these theological traditions, because people on the ground have to make decisions, life and death decisions, force people to try to come up with ways to deal with evidence and, you know, reach a decision on these sorts of things.
Since I'm not a theologian and I never went to Yale, if you look at the motto of Yale, it utilizes two ancient Hebrew words, and thum, which it characterizes as light and truth, but it's probably light and completeness. If you look in the book of Samuel, you see David asking for the ephod to make decisions. Is a person guilty or not guilty? Should I go to war, not go to war? So you see this sort of almost statistical framework in the Old Testament, even picked up in Yale's shield. And since I didn't go to Yale and I'm not a theologian, I'm talking about stuff I have no idea what I'm talking about. But I think it's fair to say that all civilizations have attempted to deal with decision-making under uncertainty. In China, you have the I Ching, the Book of Changes, which apparently was based on knowledge of agricultural workers of the seasons, but then came to be kind of misused as sort of a gambling kind of technique. Carl Jung published a translation of it decades ago. Interesting to look at if you get a chance. But no, I'd love to follow up with you on that one. Other questions, please.
I was interested that he got
elected to the Royal Society, even though he only published one scientific piece.
Well, he had published two works, actually.
So yeah. was he elected on the basis of that, or only posthumously after Price said, oh, look at this guy, or do we
know? He was elected to the Society during his lifetime, and I'm sorry, I can't really answer why he was elected.
They must have, yeah. Somebody read these pieces
right.
And thought, oh, this guy is worthy.
You know, the fact that he was...
Right,
the fact that he was defending Newton's concept of differential equations, I think, may have been one reason. Obviously, his work on theodicy also was important. Both of those were published during his lifetime.
About that in those
days. I think so. Yeah. But I was only a child then, so I don't remember.
For the American Academy these days.
Right. Other questions? We're about to run out of time. Yes. Please.
Really struck by thinking about Leviathan next to the theorem, right? Two different explanations for why the world is chaotic and strange. And I think I hear you saying that Bayes has a better way to understand chaos or bad things happening to good people. Does that seem right? Is that part of what you're helping us think about this morning? That there's ways to understand.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. What I'm trying to suggest is an alternative way. And I didn't disclose this earlier, but a decade and a half ago, there was a theological student who had been a lawyer, and he and I worked on this concept. His concept was that Leviathan was actually maybe a key to helping understand the book of Job. And that's a little bit simplistic, but I've never been able to work all the way through Job myself, and it's a very, very difficult book. But I think you're exactly right. What I'm trying to suggest is mathematics as a way of explaining deep and difficult to understand theological concepts, even though the mathematics gets deep and difficult to understand. Keith, you seem like you're about ready to give us another question here.
No, I was just, I was thinking, you know, his theory, right? This is used to decode information in the world I work in. So, you know, it's how do you, we use it, we apply this idea to figure out what's the next best guess, right? So the probability, using the probability relationships on knowing this, what's the next best guess? So if you're trying to decrypt material or you're trying to decode something, this theory comes into play to help you figure out what is the next best guess. And of course, it doesn't really work unless you have lots of compute capability because you have to run it over and over and over and over and over to get the next best guess. And then when you match the next best guess, then you have something to guess the next best guess. And you have built more and more of the capability to build the next best guess. Anyway.
No, I think that's referred to as adjusting your priors, adjusting your priors. And that's something that's touched on in the New York Times article a little bit as well. As you get more data, you can adjust the original assumption. I mean, this is the...
when you came to me, the part I was going to say, take beyond that is, it makes me laugh, right? I don't know how many of you watched the lottery. The balls come up at night, right? But my kids sit in front of the TV when they were younger, they would just try to guess the next number, right? Just shout out a number. Shout out a number. And it's like, it's the craziest thing in the world, right? How many chances do you have that you're going to get it right? Well, this tells you.
Well, and you're touching, too, on a criticism.
Well, you're not going to ever get it right.
Yeah. You're touching on a criticism of this because you come in with a hypothesis that may be totally incorrect, but you try to test it, and you get more and more data, and you come back. And these functions, that could be a polynomial with no real roots. I mean, this is nasty stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason that Bayes was rediscovered after World War II, because we had then computers that could work through these more complex numbers. This is not difficult to work with if this is 0.5, 0.75, 0.3, you can do that almost in your head. But what if these are polynomials, which an nth degree polynomial could have up to n roots, n answers, and some of them could be not real, not real answers.
Also,
gets tricky.
Try to use a formula like this to explain natural phenomena, to explain the existence of evil.
I'm sorry?
Or to explain the existence of evil. It's going to be kind of a complex equation.
Yeah, yeah. And frankly, when we talk about this sort of formula in the context of theodicy, one, theodicy is not something that we hear sermons on. Secondly, I think we all kind of smirk a little bit when we say, oh, you're going to use mathematics to talk about the existence of evil. Somehow it doesn't quite fit in with our mentality that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. But I'm arguing maybe there's a little bit of use of that. In fact, the New York Times article again says Bayes did mathematics on the side, yeah? He was a theologian, but he did mathematics on the side. But now the mathematics is important to us, but not the theology. The theology is not important to us. And my argument is there's a unity here, that we've kind of forgotten. Well, we're just about, oh, please, one last question.
A footnote about bad things happening to good people. I think your statement about theodicy is probably a little better. It's about the existence of evil. If God is good, how does evil exist? But in our heads, you know, your thing about the farmer and the librarian, oh, we think we can see what that person did. Oh, they smoked, so they got lung cancer. So we brush it away. But in fact, we know that doesn't always work, and it might not be connected at all if you go back and, because you can't know all the numbers in your lower B in parentheses there.
Right.
So it's the bigger question, but in some cases, we solve it the easy way. And this tells us, don't be so quick.
In New York, in our church in New York, when Ann and I were in Newark, we characterized the whole concept of theodicy as the question of why good things happen to bad people, which is sort of inverting it. But it's the same question. And kind of. That's an interesting question. To my knowledge, none exist, to my knowledge. But we have a few letters, I understand, and those two publications. That's about it. So there's a lot we really don't know about him. And I'm a little uncomfortable with his friend Richard Price saying, oh, yeah, Bayes' theorem is perfect for proving that God exists. Well, no, I don't think that's what he was really trying to do at all. But good question, and I forgot to bring that up. Other questions? If not, we should probably begin to adjourn. Holly, you had some announcements for next week?
Yeah, just next week, as Gordon said, we're going to continue talking about Bayes and be led by Larry Alfs and Cynthia Miller from A Distance. Thanks so much, Gordon, for this session today. It was super interesting. And thank you for everybody for your participation. We'll see you next week.
The door prize is a perfect circle.
Where did you get your compass to draw that?
One final announcement, everybody, just to make sure that you can participate next week if you want to. Next week, our church, we start one worship service. So church is at 10 o'clock next week, and adult ed will be immediately following at 11:15-ish. Okay, so switch in time next week.